This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Sammy, I pretend like I'm a tough guy, but we are joined in the studio by one of the toughest men I've ever witnessed on television, read about. It is the machine gun preacher, Sam Childers. He joins us right now. How are you doing, Sam?
Good, but you shouldn't say that. Now I'm going to have people coming up to me all day long wanting to see how tough I am.
Yeah.
So I'm an old man now. Come on, man. I'm 56. I'm almost going to collect pension soon.
Sam, how do you go with the arm wrestle? Because you look to me like someone who would take down anyone in an arm wrestle.
No. See, this is why I'm happy about my looks. Because it still defends me and I don't have to do any action.
I love it. Now, Sam, a lot of people will know you from the movie with Gerard Butler that came out years ago. You've currently got a brand new documentary out called Machine Gun Preacher Documentary and a book as well, Living on the Edge. You're out here for an Australian tour right now.
Right.
You've done this a couple of times.
Yeah, I've been here 12 times over a decade. Would have been here a few more times, but you guys keep taking my visa away.
So funny. Mate, what is it that you're passionate about sharing with Australians when you get out of here?
I think the big thing that I carry around the world, it's a message of hope. Hmm. I share who I was, what I'm doing, and then I share what God's done in my life. You know, I could be like a lot of people that when they get successful, they want to take all the credit themselves. I can't do that. You know, there's a lot of ways to success. You can do it on your own or you can do it how I did it. Mm. Mine was serving God.
I love it.
Yeah.
Take us into, I mean, people may know about you listening now. They may not know about you. Can you give us a really brief, and I know that's hard because there's a whole movie made about you.
Right.
A brief summary of how you got to this point. You're touring around and what kind of message are you hoping to share other than that message of hope?
I think a lot of times when people hear, oh, no, there's a missionary coming to town. The first thing we start to think is he's going to come for our money. He wants our money. The biggest message I bring is mission work begins at home. Mm. Mission work begins inside of your hometown. And I think when people hear me speak, it kind of blows them away because that's not why I'm here. It's not about money. It's about changing lives. I speak in high schools. I speak in rehab centers. Speak in prisons, soup kitchens. I don't get paid anything. They don't even take up a love offering. I do that for just self-satisfaction. You know, now if I speak in big venues or if I speak in churches, they do take up a love offering. That money does not hit my hands. It's all sent back to Africa to the work we do in Africa.
Which is where I think a lot of people might not be aware of this, is that you've got a significant amount of orphanages that you work with now in Africa and Sudan and Uganda, I believe.
Yeah, we have 8 projects. 5 of them are orphanages. You know, most people don't realize this. If you're in a third world country and you're in an orphanage, you have to leave at 15 years old. 70% of those children end up in prostitution because the education is not fully done. They don't have a skill or a trade. So 3 of our big projects are teaching skills and trades. They're doing everything for how to work in a hotel, how to work in a restaurant. Working on a farm, we teach farming, ranching, irrigation, how to drive tractors, how to drive trucks. We work with all the businesses we have in East Africa. We're working about 440 people a day right now. And the work keeps growing and growing. Over the years, we built 7 schools, drilled over 40 wells over the years. We're feeding right now about 12,000 meals a day right now.
Wow. That's
in incredible. East Africa. And actually, it's probably close to like 13,000 meals a day right now.
How often do you get over there and get to see the work?
I live in Africa full time. Oh, wow. The end of this year, I've been there for 23 years. So Africa's my home now. I have a motorcycle shop in the U.S. It's run by my brother. But I'm there every June, and then I go like inside the end of November, I go every year.
I'm torn, and I don't know how to word this question quite right. I've got a daughter and I've got a son. And so kind of as I look at the narrative of your life, there's something that really resonates with me, is that when I've kind of held off partnering up with something like IJM or you guys, because when I see this kind of injustice in a third world country, especially with what Joseph Kony did with little kids, it enrages me. And it gets me to a place where I'm like, what I really want to do is jump on a plane, fly over there, pick up a gun and go after these guys. Yeah, do you know? Take you, justice into my own hands.
That's something you don't want to do. And sometimes the movie kind of makes me look out to be a guy kind of losing it, which was not true. If it was, they would have arrested me. Keep in mind, I own a security company. That's what I do for a living, you know. So I work in the field of serving, protecting people is what I do.
I guess my question is that as a man who's, you know, come out of a bikie gang movement and has really discovered his identity in Christ and run full and wholeheartedly into that, when you're faced with that kind of injustice, does not the old self swell up a bit and be like, I need to get a little bit outlaw in this situation?
Yes, I'm sure it probably does. But I think that the main thing that takes over is your training and what you're there to do. We're there to serve, and then we're there also like to save children's lives. And so I focus on that all the time, you know. I don't focus on what I have to do. I always tell people, if you're going to save somebody out of a burning house, if a house is on fire, if you're going to stand outside and think about it, they're probably going to die. So I believe that if we're going to save a life, you can't think of the reaction. You can't think of the what if. You got to jump in and do it.
That's good.
Sam, I think of the way that we operate, and it's often we think about our local community. In Australia especially, we don't think about what's going on around the world. And you, as someone who lives in Africa, who's doing stuff on the ground, what's something that you really want to encourage our listeners to think about outside of our kind of comfort zone here in Sydney?
I think the big thing that I look at all the time is Africa is a country that doesn't have a welfare system, okay? Most children in East Africa only eat enough to survive every day, not to be satisfied. I would say that probably 98 to 99% of the people in Australia is like America. We eat enough to satisfy us. You know, so imagine the children in East Africa, many of them, 40% of the ones that we feed, only eat the food that we feed them. There's no welfare system. There's no government system. There's nothing else but us, you know. And it just takes a little bit. It don't take a lot of money from one person. It takes a lot of people to give a little bit, you know. So it's only a little bit.
Your life is one that I think is kind of contrast, because you go from Africa as a missionary and then you find yourself shooting a miniseries for A&E. Or right now, I mean, you're in negotiations, I guess, to get Machine Gun Preacher Part 2, put together. So you fly out of your village in Africa to Hollywood.
Right, right.
I mean, how do you handle those transitions when you go from the brink of extreme poverty to the lap of lavishness?
I think it's hard. For me, I got to stay focused on the children. I got to stay focused on God, because you start dealing with a lot of people that they're wondering, should I buy a new Porsche, or should I do this, or should I have a big birthday party that's going to cost $100,000 US? And that's what you find in the world today, in the U.S. You know, you find a lot of rich people that they're worried about one thing, you know, a birthday party or a new car or a new home for $6 million. I'm just trying to feed some children. So a lot of times I got to bite my tongue. I got to look away. Yeah. I can't stay focused on that, you know. I've had it. It also tells you in my books, I've had wealthy, wealthy millionaires write me out checks for like $5,000. And then you have the poor lady that, you know, is barely getting by, the old lady barely getting by, living in a rustic house that's ready to fall down, the roof is bad, and she writes you out a check for $10,000, you know. So it opens your eyes who people truly are, you know. For the work that I do, people ask me, Sam, why don't you bring in millions of dollars? Mm. And I always say, ask that to the people that writes the checks. You know, in my hometown, there was one guy that spends almost $250,000 a year on a little league baseball team. Now, listen, I'm not putting down the little league baseball team.
Yeah.
But $250,000 and you buy the same things every year, new mitts, new bat. You don't wear out a bat. How can a young kid wear out a ball bat and a leather glove, you know? What about the children that's dying of starvation? You know, the UN says if a miracle don't happen in South Sudan, there's nearly 7 million people on the verge of starvation. Now, I'm kind of a hard person, so I can be hard looking at that. But the thing I can't be hard at is half of them, a little over 3.5 million people, half of them are little children. I can't be hard at that. Mm. So I just think that we need to kind of focus on, you know, if we're able to help something, get in there, ask some questions how money's being spent and everything, and get in there and help them, you know. America, we spend more, let me see how I got to word that. We spend more on gourmet dog food, or what we spend on gourmet dog food in America. Now, I love dogs. I have my own dogs. Mm. But what we spend on gourmet dog food can feed every starving person in the world. Whew. Something's wrong.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Sam, you mentioned that there may be a part two of the film. What kind of stuff is going to be seen in that, if you can reveal the script to us?
Everything that wasn't in the first one. No, I still rescue people, okay, to this day.
Yep.
And this is one, it's the actual title to it is The Last Rescue. And it's about a rescue that I did a couple years ago. Yeah, I'm getting old now, you know. I've been in Africa for 23 years. I'm 56 years old. And, you know, I'm going to have to put the guns down soon.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
You know, so, yeah. So, but the big thing is it's not so much about the movie as it is what I do, that I'm still there rescuing children. People need to look at the story, Machine Gun Preacher, and need to realize I could have walked away. I had millions of dollars. Millions of dollars came into my hands. I could have walked away, but I didn't. I decided to stay there and build schools and feed people. And, you know, it cost me a lot. You know, it cost me my own family. I'm not married no more. And, you know, so it cost me a lot, almost everything. But the one thing I can say is I never walked away. When success hit me, when money hit me, I kept doing what God called me to do.
Well, if you want to know more about Sam or hear him, tonight you can at Waterloo at the International Screen Academy, but there's also the book and the documentary.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us on Hope Breakfast, Sam.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.